Good evening, America. Good morning, Australia. And welcome to everyone else across the planet. I have to say that Mel B's intro to the show has me calmed and feeling quite pleasant by the time I get to this stage. It's been a really busy morning. Welcome back to Unwavered Success with Mel B, the Success Alchemist. Now, just a reminder that if you're listening live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, you will find content notes and links to anything we talk about on the show today. And something important that I'm going to do every show this year is an acknowledgement of country. And for those of you listening across the world, as Australians, we are making a determined effort to acknowledge our Indigenous owners of the land, and it goes a little like this. I respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast, and pay my respect to the elders, past and present, and all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here listening today. The Yugambeh language region is southeast Queensland, and in particular the Gold Coast, and that's where I broadcast from. Just a reminder too, if you miss any of our past shows, you can catch up on Binge TV Networks USA, Hero Go TV Networks USA, and on the Tony TV channel app, available on all Roku, LG, and Samsung smart TVs across the globe. Now, this is one of my favorite shows each week when I get to talk to the gorgeous Mel Belmont, who is an ex-Scottish gal. And now living happily in Australia, Mel's a mindset mentor, intuitive healer, and speaker on perspective shifts and empathic elevation. She's widely recognized as a change maker for the superconscious transformation within people. She partners with empathpreneurs to untangle their mind web so they feel unwavered confidence and the ability to accomplish the impact that they're currently dreaming about. She is recognized in the top 1% leadership coaches across Australia, and she is a multi-award winning quantum healer. We are incredibly lucky to have Mel B on this show series, and this is our sixth show. Now, before we get on to today's show, I just wanted to make comment about some of the things that are happening around the world. And for me, it's about not watching the news and TV because I just can't bear it at the moment. And it's about the inequality that's playing out in a lot of sectors across the world, but particularly in Australia, where an international number one tennis star has the ability to expedite court processes that take other human beings decades to navigate. And it's about the implosion of Australia's health system, and it's about the impacts on our healthcare workers and all of that. And it kind of gives me a general malaise. And today we want to talk about how empaths like myself and Mel deal with this, because sometimes, and it's not all the time, most of the time I can ground myself and get myself out of the funk, but sometimes when it's all happening in your face, it's hard to deal with, isn't it, Mel? Welcome back to the show. Let's kick off with a little discussion around being an empath in a chaotic world.
I guess what I'd like to start with is a caveat of, I guess this is kind of the point. It's not necessarily about political views or personal opinion. Being an empath is a state of being, and how we are connected to energy. So you and I actually have slightly different opinions about some of the things you just raised. And like, I actually see things differently, that's okay. So
that's good.
That's a thing that I think a lot is missing, is the ability to have a difference of opinion and still be respectful as human beings to one another. There's a lot
Definitely.
of divide being created. we can, I don't want to get into the whens and whys of that's happening. It is happening. How do we cope with differences of opinion, with things that are being forced upon us or impressed upon us that maybe we don't agree with, whether it's for our betterment or if we see it not? How do we cope as empaths with conflict against what we see is right for us? And I'm doing a lot of this work with my clients at the moment. Nearly every client, I think I've had about 8 clients this week already. And I would say at least 2 out of 3 are struggling with the pandemic and all of the complexities of it. How do we cope? I think the main thing is to recognize when it is not serving, when we are watching and being part of the observation. Does it serve us to observe, to buy into, to see and connect with energy that is either disturbing us, that is maybe going against some of our values or principles or morals of what we believe the world should look like? If it doesn't serve us, and by that I mean, how does it make you feel? And if that is affecting your day-to-day functioning, then apart from being abreast of changes and what you need to be legally, I suppose, aware of, how does it serve you to keep abreast of all of the shifts and changes? For me, it doesn't serve me. It doesn't serve my clients for me to be caught up, distracted, or worse, energetically impacted negatively by being aware of what's going on. If I tune into the amount of people who are dying for whatever reason or being impacted or injured or hospitalized, that's traumatic. When you think about the scale of this pandemic, that doesn't serve me to dwell on that, might be a better way of explaining it. It's better for me to
Definitely.
do what I do have control of. Focus on my community, my sphere of influence, my family, my units, and focus on how they are impacting me and everything else I can't control. So for me, and the advice I'm giving my clients is only expose yourself and get caught up or absorb or watch or expose yourself to what you can handle. That's it.
Great advice, Mel. Great advice. And I find myself switching off Monday to Friday and then trying to do just to catch up on the weekend, just to because I think it's important as human beings to be aware at the least of what is happening in the greater world. Buying into it on whatever level is manageable for you, and sometimes for me, injustice is one of my highest triggers. So if I see or feel or hear about injustice, that's quite, I have to say something about it. But otherwise, it's about, like you said, Mal, recognizing that yes, we're in a global pandemic. Can I do anything about that? Well, no, I can't. So you have to take a step back and breathe and ground and then be available to help people manage their state, I guess. That concept of not being in control must be triggering for many of your clients, Mel. Do you find that the pandemic has brought about that feeling of lack of control?
Yeah, definitely. And the removal of choice, especially with matters that are involving their family, themselves. And this isn't about being, some people might be triggered by what I'm saying and misunderstanding. I'm not talking about being passive and not keeping abreast of it or ignoring. I'm talking about the level and then frequency and the depth of exposure you give yourself. Like you're saying,
Correct.
limit it, keep yourself informed, and control what you can control. These things are out of our hands. We don't know how decisions are going to play out down the track. So, what's the point of worrying and stressing and getting caught up energetically with something that in this country is changing week by week anyway?
It is.
Let's try and stay on track with our own lives. Now, this is hard. People's
Oh,
livelihoods are literally,
yes.
people are going bankrupt. People are committing suicide. The world is in a lot of turmoil.
Yes.
And it is tragic. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying I can't handle being plugged into how tragic this pandemic is globally. So, what I can control in order to manage myself, my own happiness, which I am fully responsible for, is how much I switch into. So, the lack of control, how do you get control back? By stop looking at the things that you don't have control of. How do you get control of yourself? By recognizing what you can choose to expose yourself to keep your elevation high, to keep your vibration, your focus on things that you do have influence within your own household, for example.
Absolutely. Wonderful words of advice, Mel. And leading into that, part of our discussion this week is about unplugging, recalibrating, and being unwavered. And in introducing that concept, we need to talk about our own limitations and what we live with. And to start that off, I want to explore the concept that some people see being an empath as a limitation. I actually see it as a gift. What are your thoughts, Mel?
Look, it's got its pros and cons, like most
Yeah.
talents. If we aren't aware that we are impacted or influenced by external sources, then it is absolutely a hindrance. It is a limitation. It does stop
Yeah.
people leaving the house or going to crowded spaces. I didn't realize I didn't have anxiety, although I experienced
Yes.
anxiety for most of my life. So it does limit you if you don't know or understand that some of these feelings and emotions, the energy that is in motion around us, is actually being picked up by us. So it can limit us, but I do see it as a gift now. I now understand
'Cause you
what I've,
know.
yes, now I understand and know, have a knowing when something's not my thing. This feeling is not my thing. It's not my stuff. This has come
Yeah.
from an external source because I had zero concerns about something. And then out of nowhere, I'm feeling anxious or emotional for no logical reason. That's when we know that we're an empath tuning into something that isn't necessarily part of our energetic force field. So it can be a limitation until we know how to protect. And what that means is truly understanding. So if you can visualize the concept of energy waves, so
Yes.
Wi-Fi, radio waves, light, these are all things that science is so embodied and we don't even give conscious thought to and accept. Gravity, even, that it has energy fields. We are energetic beings. There's a reason why we don't like people within a certain distance from us because it's inside
Yeah.
the energy pulse that we
A
give
safe
out.
space.
Safe space for sure. And if we can create a barrier of protection around whatever that safe zone space is around us, that's how we can protect. That can be, excuse me, a
Yeah.
physical wall if you need to. I'm sure I've touched this on one of the previous episodes. An invisible cloak, a bubble. A bubble's a
Yes.
really common
Yes.
one. A dome around our home or our car. These are ways that we can intuitively tell ourselves to protect, repel things that aren't frequency of love or above.
Yeah. That
Anything
was
else?
so helpful.
Good,
That
good.
was so
Protect me.
helpful for me, Mel, to understand that we have that within our capacity to do that and to protect ourselves. And I keep learning all the time, especially in talking to you, how to live in this world with an empathic predisposition and to protect myself and make sure that I still, because if you don't understand yourself and you don't protect yourself, then you're not living your best life, are you, Mel?
No, you're living a sheltered life that is not to your fullest potential because you're protecting your energy and you don't even realize, or you're not protecting. You have things like chronic fatigue or the words are escaping me now, but some of these immobilizing immune system
Some
issues.
issues.
Because you don't even realize that your energy source is being affected.
When we're talking about limitations on our human experience, I thought that today it was important to talk about the concept of unconscious bias again and why we need to be aware of that, Mel. Can you tell us about unconscious bias and why it's an important word to be aware of and to have knowledge of it around our own lives?
Well, let's backtrack that a little. So, we talked in a previous episode about how our subconscious is created. So, the views of the world, the way we feel we fit into the world is all created mainly, not all, like 80, 90% of the way we see the world and how we fit into it is formed by the time we're 8 to 9 years old. So we're creating an identity of how we are as a human. We call it an identity. I'm a girl. I am sporty. I am blonde. So those phrases of our identity are set. And that goes way into moral beliefs, philosophies of the world, things like religions and our and those levels of beliefs are taken on board in our early development. So bias is something that we don't even realize that we overlay a preference of. So an unconscious bias is something that helps us identify how we like fit into the puzzle of society and what is and isn't acceptable, comfortable, right, wrong. All of those views of our world is and creates our unconscious bias. So a really easy way of explaining what the way an unconscious bias could play out is as a child, if you're raised in an Italian household, for example, or Greek, we know that they're very exuberant and expressive and they use their hands and they're vocal. They're quite outwardly projecting. It's their personality, the culture. Being Italian is vivacious and loud and vibrant, stereotypically. So a child that grows up with that kind of dinner table environment, compared to perhaps a completely different upbringing that's quiet, the child is not really spoken to at the dinner table. It's about adult conversation. Children are only spoken to when they've got a question, and otherwise, we don't want to hear from you. So, depending on that child's version of the world, they may look at as an at an Italian family and the way that they see them interacting as loud and aggressive or confrontational, because the way they were raised, the view of the world is so completely different. And there's no right or wrong to either. It's different. And so the bias is, well, we don't talk loudly. We don't have arguments. Disagreements are a bad thing because that's not how I learned to engage and to communicate, and vice versa. The loud, exuberant communicators say, this is how we express love. And you guys hardly talk to one another. So, where's your connection? So the view and the bias in that example is completely different. There is no right or wrong. It's the perspective of what is normal is completely different. And so those biases are what creates our mind webs of our identity, how we see the world, how we fit in. So,
and that also, it does. Okay. That's a wonderful explanation. And into that, we then put society's programming of what a woman should do, what a man should do, how a woman should act, how a man should act. And that also plays into our reactions to the world. And those things can limit us, can't they? Mel, can you explain for the audience how some of that society programming limits our lives and our thoughts?
Look, in every way. Sometimes, depending on the upbringing that you have, some limitations are healthy and some are not. It depends on how you were raised, what those limitations were taught to us as being for the purpose of. So, for example, laws are in place to keep us safe, to keep society harmonious and interacting, and to generally look after one another. Now, some of those laws we might disagree with. Speeding. So there'll be a law on a road that you disagree with, but it's there maybe because the generalized, so say a speed is 60 kilometers an hour, but you feel it's safe to do 80, but not all of the population has the ability to be as focused and switched on as you are. So you might be safely able to drive at 80 kilometers on a road where there's lots of entrance, and that's why they've made it 60. But it doesn't mean every human is always paying attention at the right amount at the right time. So they dull it down. They make it safer for the general populace. We might disagree with some of these rules and regulations, but they're created sometimes bureaucratically, often not with full thinking around the consequences of the onflow, but generally laws are in place to keep us safe and to provide a community, an environment of safety. So if we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, security and safety is one of the first things we need after
it is
housing. We need to feel safe in order for us to be a fully actualized spiritual human being. If we don't feel safe, and that comes in all forms of that, then it's very hard to be spiritually and soul fulfilled, because our basic survival is under threat.
It's actually a good way to look at things, laws in particular, that you might not agree with, and remind yourself this is not about you, the individual. This is about wider humanity and creating safety around the wider community. So what's best for the majority? And I think some of the disproportionate responses that we're seeing play out across the world in terms of many things is around that idea that people have stopped thinking about the greatest good for the greatest amount of people and are more focused on what's best for themselves, particularly around laws and rules, and particularly in the last 2 years. Mel, when do you cut off between what's being best for the greater humanity and what's best for you? So I guess what I'm trying to get across to the audience is that there are times and places when you need to come first, and there are other times and places where the greater humanity is going to come first. And how do you determine where that line sits? Have you got some advice around that?
Look, this is a very controversial, it could be seen as a very controversial discussion we're having. And I want to be clear, I'm not taking one side or the other on any of the decisions that our governments and world leaders are taking. I have differences of opinion from what I'm actually saying and not saying right now. I do know that governments don't always, and doctors and all of these establishments don't always make the right decision for humanity and their population. Maybe sometimes it is driven by other agenda. What I'm talking about is
Absolutely.
understanding where biases come from, where societal programming comes from. And if we understand that where the conditioning of what our brain has created for our reality as our truth, as our normal, then when it doesn't sit with us, that's where we get the choice of saying, well, I disagree with that. That's where voting comes in, whether that works out legally or not, or whatever. But the choice then becomes, I have a different opinion. How am I going to take control of my own life, my own choices, and live through that? Now, there are advocates in the world who are doing amazing work and need to do the work. I am not an advocate.
Yes.
That there are people who are prepared to be in the public arena saying, I disagree with opinion Y, my opinion is M over here, completely different. And we need that democratic right to be able to say, I have a difference of
Absolutely.
opinion, because otherwise we're implying the only people who are ever right are the humans at the top of the ladders. And
And
sometimes
that's
we know they're
not
not always right because they're
reality.
human. They can have their
Agreed.
own biases. So how I operate and what I give advice to my clients who are struggling is, again, what can you control? What do you want to do with your own choices? Where do you want to shop? How do you want to live? Who do you want to interact with? Those we can control, even if it's not necessarily as free as we would like, or the choices aren't as open and have consequences that still impact us. It's still a society we live in. At the moment, until separation or segregation is created, which may happen, well, we'll worry about that when we have to. And I'm going to let the people, the advocates and the lobbyists and all those people work it out, because that's not where I'm going to
It's
spend
too
my time.
much.
It's important work, but it's not work. I'm not skilled for that. That is not what I'm here on earth to do. So I'm choosing to
That's
accept what my gifts are and how I can use them as a consequence from the other decisions that are made, whether they're biased or not, whether they're in alignment with my philosophies, my principles, my views of life and spirituality.
And Mel, it's actually okay to be you in those circumstances. It's actually okay for humans to disagree. I have lots of friends and people that I associate with, and I don't necessarily agree with everything they say. But I know enough about myself that I can listen with an understanding and mind and an open heart and hear what they have to say. I still don't have to agree with them. I still don't have to necessarily do what they want me to do, but I'm open to the conversation. I'm open to what other people have to say. And I fear that some of humanity might have lost that ability to be open to all views on different subjects. And, in a pandemic, there are a huge amount of varying views on a huge range of things. And I'm not sure that we will have answers that allay those concerns or questions for a long time yet. We mightn't have answers as to the whys, the hows, what's going to work for a long time yet. And it's about sitting with that and going, well, like you said, I can't change that. I can't do anything about, but how can I live my life that fits within what's going on at the moment? So, I have friends who don't want to say, and this is controversial again, who don't want to be vaccinated. And that's okay. That is their choice. I just want them to be safe. And some of the decisions that are made will make their lives unsafe, I guess you could say. And
From your
I actually
perspective.
believe, but I believe that if other decisions had been made, they would be equally safe and able to make that decision and carry on with their lives. It is very much about thinking that there is always a different perspective from your own, that there's always a different idea from your own, and it's about listening, taking on what works for you, and discarding the rest. Mel, you work with lots and lots of people around their limitations and helping them to live their best lives. And I just want to go back again to the idea that once we know ourselves really well, we become better versions of ourselves. And that's like the essence of what you do within the empathic group of human beings that you work with. So, how hard is it sometimes from the people that you've talked to and your clients, how hard is it sometimes for them to grasp the idea that their perspective might be limiting their best life? That
And
can
that's
be
a
really
powerful question.
challenging.
And like I interjected with you, is it's always about perspective. You have a view and a perspective. Someone else has a view. And what you're highlighting beautifully is it's okay to have different perspectives, even if you feel that that perspective is harmful to themselves or others. It's still an alternative. And when we can live with that lens of the
Comfortably.
world of saying, is it at all slightly possible that I might be wrong? Is it possible that I don't have all of the information I need? Is it possible that I have a bias? And the answer is always yes to everything.
It is,
There
isn't
is
it?
always
It
a
is
possibility.
always.
And so if we can catch ourselves when we are being staunch and judgmental of somebody else's choices, decisions, behaviors. Now, we're not talking about harming, like murder and assault and rape or any of those things. That's a different set of,
That's not okay.
that's not what we're talking about. That's never okay. Be clear. That stuff, we know that's wrong. But from opinions and perspectives and viewpoints and philosophies, there is always more information that we could be getting. Always.
Always.
It's another piece of the puzzle that we are not open to. We are not bots plugged into Google where we're receiving thousands of pieces of information about the same topic and different points of views and different angles simultaneously. We're capable of doing that, but we're not capable of doing that.
Would be a
So
lot.
I always like to be more humble with my positioning and thinking, is there another perspective? Is there a piece of information that I might not even think that can just blow my mind? Absolutely. And when we come from that place of, am I being so stoic and staunch that I'm limiting my ability to be an open human being? Now, I get it wrong. We all have discussions where we want to hold our position, our viewpoint. We are right. The easiest way to get through conflict is to recognize there might be something else to consider. I need to clear my throat. I'm just going to go mute a second.
In thinking about those perspectives, it's also important to teach our children that there are different perspectives, there are different views, and they might not always. It's about teaching yourself to ask questions and be curious, isn't it?
Absolutely. We don't know what our bias, our unconscious mind has created to be our truth. We don't know what we're forming our opinions on. It's all happening in microseconds. The thoughts,
It
the
is.
processing, the filtering, everything that flows through is processed subconsciously. So we don't know necessarily where or why, or we're not giving full credit to why we think something or believe something to be true. And when I'm doing a work on a subconscious mind or with a subconscious mind, often we're finding the alternative perspective or another piece of information that first exposure to that situation or the scenario missed. So we're accessing other pieces of information, other perspectives to add to the context that we now are looking back on it and reflecting back and going, what else could be true in that situation? Now, it's a bit of a superpower I have of asking powerful questions and being able to reframe. And that's a coaching term for changing a perspective from something that's unserving and thinking, well, what else could there be to help me have a different viewpoint, which is less triggering, less impactful, less emotional for me to behave and carry forward with.
And Mel, as a human being, we are uniquely positioned to have the power to do that. So our brains are powerful computers which can bring into our thoughts different perspectives. And what we once thought was absolutely true may suddenly start to go, oh, but what if this was actually true? What if that actually happened? What if, and it's particularly true around, let's use money as an example. It's particularly true around money for many people. That's where some of those mind blocks really get mired in deep, don't they? If you've grown up with some of the old sayings like money doesn't grow on trees, don't waste money, those things get embedded in your brain and they actually limit the abundant life that every human being has open to them. How do you work with those sorts of things, Mel?
Well, first it's finding like the actual process is to identify when we lock that into our belief system, into our way of looking at the world. I remember one of my blocks that I had to adjust was as a young person, seeing, I can't remember what the car was now. This was years ago. I did this mind web, but it was a fancy car, like, you know, a very expensive luxury car. And I remember the adult I was with saying, oh, I wonder what they did, as in illegally, to get that car. So they're either a crook or they are taking in a way that is harming others.
Yes.
So that adult's view of the world is you only get money by doing ill upon others or doing things illegally. I took
that's
that
a good
on
one.
Board. It's like, oh, is that, that's what money means. Money is the root of all evil. And when you hear that numerous times and you see that in movies and you hear those words in songs and lyrics, and you come across more evidence that stacks on top of one another, your belief about whatever the topic, money, wealth.
Money is evil.
Wealthy. You've just got all this evidence and you're tuning out from the opposite. I now believe money amplifies the person. Whatever you are as a person, you can do more of whatever your personality style is with that money. If you're a good person, you can do more good with money.
And if you're a bad person,
you might do more unhelpful, less good things with the money.
Thanks.
So the societal programming comes from our parents. It comes from media. It comes from religion. It comes from all external sources. And we are sponges when we are young. And we believe, because we've got no context not to believe. We believe our governments, our role models, anything in a uniform is here for a good thing. And there's nothing wrong with that
and
unless you're in a
not.
country where they're all corrupt. So our perspective is completely different depending on the culture, the country you grew up in. So yes, our limits need to be understood in our subconscious mind. When we understand, I believe this because of those sets of exposures as a child. No, money doesn't have to just come from bad places.
That's right. It can be
money is a good
wonderful and
thing.
yes.
It's what people do with it. It's like power isn't a bad thing. Knowledge isn't a bad thing. It's how it's applied. Guns are not the problem.
Yeah.
It's the people who use them.
Correct.
So
when we think about
our own bias, it's like, is there a chance that how I view the world has been programmed that I don't even question my programming?
And isn't it from a perspective of removing those limitations, particularly the ones around money, it has an immensely powerful impact on your life when you start to challenge those perspectives rather, and you start to think, oh, maybe that's not true. And then you start to think in a different way and your life changes. And that's essentially, Mel, what you want for every person that you work with is for them to see life in a way that empowers them and in a way that helps them live their best life. And believing that money is evil is not really helpful to anyone, is it?
No, it doesn't serve anyone, does it? I don't
no.
think it does.
No.
That's just my belief.
I don't think it does.
Am I right? Not necessarily. Again, depends on the circumstances, depends on the culture, the environment that this person's in. It's about having the humility to acknowledge that perhaps there might be more pieces to the truth. Not that necessarily
which is
right or wrong. Because all of that is an opinion. And yes, there are people who are evil. There are atrocities that are done upon. I just don't understand the human psychology sometimes that can
that
cause
allows
harm to
them.
Another. But then I look and go, okay, what happened to them that distorted their view of the world that caused them to think that it's okay to behave towards another sentient creature that way? What is their trauma? What is their upbringing? What was their normal childhood experience? Till we break those cycles, we're always going to have human conflict.
Definitely. It would be wonderful to vision a world of the future where we're living at a higher consciousness that understands these things intrinsically and from a very early age, that circumvents some of that evil that is perpetuated on other human beings by human beings, and to make sure that those, because oftentimes, Mel, those things happen in when very early stages of life and they're carried throughout their life. It would be wonderful to change that those thoughts early in life so that they don't get to the doing these horrible things later in life. But for every human being, it is important that they understand that they're not living life through a clear set of lenses, that those lenses are actually distorted by all of the things that we've been talking about today. And one of the other things that I quickly wanted to touch on today was about the importance of hopes and dreams for humanity.
All right, is that a question?
And now I'm taking the breath. So
Yeah.
the importance of hopes and dreams. And so I've had this conversation, and I hope my husband doesn't mind me mentioning this, but I have huge, big hopes, visions, and dreams. I have vision boards. I have a whiteboard, etc., etc. But my husband says that his life is very simple and that he doesn't have dreams. And so I wanted to explore the importance of hopes and dreams for human beings and why they're important and why you should allow yourself to dream and dream big. In
Well,
the
that's that.
context of we're talking about limitations, and for hopes and dreams to survive and thrive, they do so in the absence of limitations.
Oh, where do I begin?
I know, I've asked you a big question in the last little while of the program. Saved it for last.
If, how long do we have? We've got 15 minutes.
We got to,
If
yeah.
the way that many of us in personal development understand the human existence is the need for growth. Human beings, if we're not growing or expanding, is my preferred word, we're not expanding, then we're stagnant. And some even say we're dying. So if you're not growing, you're dying. And that's in your mindset, your ability to take more on board. So I think the concept of hope, moving dreams, goals, and aspirations, because that's like the next level, but just basic,
Hope.
I guess, belief that humans, that life all has a purpose or it's got more meaning than hardship, because some people have freaking hard lives. Like, why are some people optimistic and some people it completely destroys them? Now, we could come back to perhaps it's the upbringing, perhaps it's the belief in self that things are happening for us or happening to us or against us. But I have discovered that the more I blame others or the world or circumstances around me, the less dissatisfied I was within myself. And the more I looked externally for a reason for my struggle, the harder it became to reframe my own way of looking and being in that struggle. So appreciating that, look, some of this is hard. I've been sexually abused as a child. I was raped by my first serious boyfriend. I've had cancer. And these are things that
They're
would
big things,
leave
they're big
many
life
people,
things.
would leave people pretty downtrodden. And quite rightly, I'm not making any of my experiences necessary for you. I'm sharing what I've gone through and how I've found that having hope, not only that I'm going to get through whatever this thing is, but belief that I'm going to be stronger or wiser or more compassionate because of those experiences. They're the things that get me through day to day. I've had people comment because I shared very publicly my chemo journey. I've had people say, I don't understand how you could go through that so high vibe when you didn't have vitality. And then what I mean by that is I was physically drained, tired, and depleted. So my body had no energy, but my positivity, my mindset, my optimism were high. And so people could see that. And we come across these people and like, you're amazing. How do you have that mindset or that attitude about life despite hardship? And I don't know if it's hope. I think it's more of a belief that this doesn't have to be permanent, and a belief that I will become something better as a result on the other side. So I'm going to
To
surrender
this.
into this period of time sucks. It's horrible. You can't change that reality, Could It Be Worse was another thing that I focused on. There are people who are always doing it harder than us. Always somebody's got a shittier situation than you. So looking at the bias of, well, am I having throwing myself a pity party? And it's okay to do that too. I chose
I was
not
going to
to.
say, you actually have to grant yourself small pockets of time where you just curl up in a corner and go, this is horrible.
Yeah,
This
this is
is
awful.
shocking.
My life is really sucky right now.
Yeah,
Absolutely,
and that's
because
okay.
those emotions must be acknowledged. And this bullshit that we have to be high vibe all the time and that you just shut down
You
any
can't.
negativity, that is not being a
You just
human.
can't.
By recognizing the emotional states, then we can learn from those emotional states. So I found it easier through reflection of all the times that were hard, that were challenging, that were freaking awful, that I became a better person afterwards in some way. That's the hope that kept me going. But it was never hope, because belief, I feel, hope is a little empty because it might not happen, but I have a belief that I will get some silver lining out of
Out of
everything that
that.
happens. I see life happening for me. And I'm not saying that's easy to do with some of the problems people are going through. And there's some things that are unexplainable. They don't have people's loved ones and children should not suffer the way they are or pass over unexpected. It's horrifying. But you will get through that period of time. It might take a decade. And it sucks that entire decade. Will you learn something about yourself on the other side?
Oh, God, yeah.
Undoubtedly.
Ooh. Absolutely. Absolutely, you'll learn something on the other side of that. Mel, we're just about out of time. Another
You, because they
fascinating
were getting hard questions.
discussion. I'm like, I need to give Mel a break now. I've made her work too hard in this session, and you've answered such deep questions so beautifully, Mel, and so vulnerably and openly. And I think part of me likes to believe that humans were built with a capacity to thrive and survive. And I think that inbuilt desire to survive, in most instances, triumphs at the end of the day. It doesn't always. The news for me this morning that a girl that I had a brief, beautiful interaction with in November has suddenly passed, and you go, oh, what a loss. You know, one of those beautiful, vibrant, gorgeous, heart-centered human beings, and you go, what's with that?
Why?
What's with
Why?
that? Why? And sometimes there is no reason as to why, except that I believe that the universe always has a plan around those things, and we may not know, I may never know, but someone will know the reason behind that. And believing also that she is in a safer, better, happier place. No matter what your belief is, I always choose to believe that there's a better, safer, happier, more beautiful place, and that her soul lives on and can come back to be here and have a human experience, or not, you know, or not, either way. But again, just focusing on the fact that I believe that humans were built to survive, and that even in our darkest times, hope is the thing, and desire for a better day will be. And then the other thing is that sometimes for some human beings, they've had enough. They're exhausted, they're tired, they've done their best, and things are just, when someone passes from, I hate to use cancer, having just spoken about it with you, but when someone passes in that instance and you just want their pain to stop, you just want their soul to fly free, that's a different scenario. But Mel, finally, thank you so much for going to those deep places with me today. I really appreciate it. I know that there will be people listening out there that needed to hear those words of wisdom today and understand that human beings are unique and we're awesome and we're amazing. And finally, I just want to say, if you want to reach out to Mel B, please do. Her website is melb.com. She does the most amazing programs and work with her clients that sees them thriving in their lives at no matter what level they are. And you can thrive in your life if you're a checkout chick at Woolies. You can thrive in your life if you're head of a multinational company. It doesn't matter. All we want to see is you have the best life that you can have. Mel B, Success Alchemist, thank you for joining us again live today. We'll be back next week with the gorgeous Mel Belmont and another show in Unwavered Success. And that, my friends, is your lot for with this week. Thanks so much, Mel.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Bye for now.